Hello, and thank you for joining us for episode 3 in the Kind Stop the Bird podcast series. In this episode, we'll be looking at the fraud and cyber vulnerabilities facing independent schools in the UK. I'm Melanie Hayes, Chief Marketing Officer at Kind, and I'm joined by Kind's Head of Product, Tom Fry. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
And our very special guest, Owen Daly, who's a Director of Forensic Services at Crow, who, as we all know, are one of the leading audit, tax, advisory and risk firms. Hi, Owen.
Hi, Melanie. Hi.
Thank you both so much for joining me. Now, as we're all aware, cyber risks are one of the biggest threats facing businesses at the moment. But a survey undertaken in 2019 found that 61% of UK independent schools have been targeted for cyber attacks in the last 5 years. And in fact, our own recent research, produced by Crow and Kind and the University of Portsmouth Centre for Counter-Fraud Studies in June this year, delved even deeper and looked at how vulnerable these independent schools were in the UK to cybercrime. It's fair to say the results were absolutely staggering. So perhaps to get us started, I can ask you, Owen, why do you think independent schools are an attractive target to cybercriminals? And although we've looked at independent schools, do you think this is an issue for all schools?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not only an issue for all independent schools, but for other industries too. So we've conducted similar research for other industries, such as UK legal firms and AIM-listed companies. And it's clear that cyber risks are increasing regardless of industry. So, you know, no one's immune. Just because it's a school doesn't mean it's immune either. And for independent schools, really, regardless of their size, they continue to be targeted by cyber criminals. And there's a couple of reasons that really help you understand why criminals might target schools. So they hold sensitive pupil data, including the financial details of parents who spend a considerable amount of money on fees each term. So hackers will target schools with data protection measures and social engineering attacks such as phishing, because these schools rely on their reputation to attract new students. So any threat or reputational damage caused by a data breach can have a really big impact, meaning that the schools might be more likely to pay out against a ransomware attack to avoid this, to protect that reputation. Schools, they may be less likely to have protective measures in place or access to cybersecurity resources to help combat them. They potentially may not have a dedicated IT team, or if they do have a dedicated IT team, they may not have people who are specialists in security. And hackers also consider schools less likely to have protective measures in place or access to cybersecurity resources to protect themselves against cyber attacks. Particularly important now as schools accelerate online learning methods due to the current COVID pandemic.
It's really interesting you say about lack of IT resources. I've heard from speaking to some people at independent schools that it's not uncommon for the responsibility of cybersecurity to sit with a teacher or admin staff and not a technical expert. And speaking of our research, to me, one of the standout figures was 98.5%. So nearly all of these independent schools are exposed to having their email addresses spoofed and used to send spam, phishing or otherwise fraudulent emails. Let me go to you, Tom. Why do you think this is? Why do you think this figure is so high?
Well, it's mainly because they don't have the correct email security configurations in place, or they mistakenly believe that they do have them in place when actually they don't. To be clear, this is an issue that affects many organisations. It's not just schools. So, and it's not hard to see why this happens. When email was designed in the first place, it basically had one job to do, and that was get an email from your computer to someone else's computer as quickly as possible. And there wasn't really any thought to how it could be tampered with or used for fraudulent purposes along the way. So it's really this legacy system that email was built to be that everything else has been built upon ever since. And to make sure that an organization or a company's emails are not spoofable, they would have to set up email security to have the correct frameworks and policies in place. And the first I want to talk about is the Sender Protection Framework. It's also known as SPF. And by configuring an SPF record, a company is telling the rest of the world which domains should be trusted to send emails on their behalf. And then by default, emails from anywhere else should be considered as fraudulent or spoofed emails. So what we know is that a lot of companies do have the SPF record in place, but unfortunately, it's ineffective unless the company has also published a DMARC policy. So whilst the SPF record acts as the kind of the initial security check of has this email come from a trusted source, what the DMARC policy does is tells the receiving email provider what to do with emails that fail the SPF security check. And it's It's actions such as, should that email be let through anyway? Should it be quarantined or moved to a spam folder? Or should it be blocked completely and the receiver never gets that email at all? Basically, what I'm saying is that without the DMARC policy in place, the SPF record alone is pretty much useless. And unfortunately, for the majority of companies, that's often the case. Practically, what this means is that those companies' domains can be used by hackers to send spoof emails, both externally, so to their customers and clients, but also internally to their own employees and their own staff. And those emails will be indistinguishable from legitimate emails, and they'll bypass inbox security and they'll bypass the spam filters.
Melanie, I have a really good example from this year of what can happen when email security isn't configured correctly. We were working with a school and their email was phished, and it looked like a spoofed email was used and sent to them. And they ended up transferring £3 million to hackers. So £3 million, an enormous amount of money for a school to lose on the basis of something that's really quite easy to prevent.
That's an incredible amount. So yeah, email fraud is definitely one that's concerning. I think as well, ransomware is something that we're hearing a lot about and is commonly increasing threat. Our research actually showed that 34% of these independent schools had at least one external service exposed, which would place them at higher risk of a ransomware attack. Owen, have you come across any other examples of schools falling victim to a ransomware attack?
Yeah, I'm aware of one in particular hit by ransomware. So all of the school servers were encrypted, including those used to store pupils' coursework. So the school didn't pay the ransom, and they were in a position to restore from backups, which is great. Not everyone has those backups available. But unfortunately, some of the pupils did lose GCSE coursework, and the whole experience was just hugely disruptive for the school. Could have been prevented.
Oh, wow. Yes, you think about the financial loss, but the actual losing of exam results is frightening, isn't it? Tom, maybe I can go back to you. Why do you think ransomware attacks are increasing then?
Simply put, it's because it's relatively easy to administer a ransomware attack, and the chances of the cyber criminals being caught are actually really quite low. So that, coupled with the fact that organizations are actively paying these ransoms, which are, you know, they're substantial ransoms in the six-figure bracket, then there's plenty of incentive for hackers to keep doing it. And also, because of what Owen mentioned earlier, if these companies don't have backups in place, then they will feel they've got very little choice but to pay the ransom. What we know is that in the UK specifically, the number of organizations that have experienced a ransomware attack and then gone on to pay the ransom stands at 28%. That was in 2019, and that was double the figure from the year before. So although paying ransomware is not necessarily the right thing to do or the advisable thing to do, organizations understandably see it as the quickest and easiest way of restoring data if they need to. So unfortunately, our research into the schools showed that many of them were vulnerable to these types of ransomware attacks. So what we know is that typically hackers do not identify a specific target for an attack up front. Instead, they initially cast their net wide and scan the internet to identify domains where there are open ports or exposed external services which aren't securely configured. So that's how they identify their target, and that's how they have a window in. The types of services commonly exploited include remote desktop and file transfer protocol, both of which, as we know, are being used more and more in the current climate of working from home and online learning. And as a result, we're seeing a rise and rise in ransomware attacks.
I think what's also interesting with ransomware is, one, there's the asking for the ransom, but there's another factor as well that we hear about, isn't there, that even if you don't pay it, not only will they not give your files back, but they'll actually take the data and sell the data on or use that data so it becomes a data breach as well, which is the kind of next level to ransomware, which is concerning. Going back to the research, what was interesting, it's showing that vulnerable and out-of-date services are cause of concern. Why do you think this is a concern as well, Tom?
Yeah, so nearly 60% of the schools in this research were running a service with a well-known vulnerability, and 14% running a service, out-of-date software. This means that schools are putting themselves at massive risk of the things we were talking about before, so ransomware attacks, data breach, or malware. Obviously, this is not us saying that these schools will definitely be attacked, but the question is, why make yourself a target if you don't have to? Just to clarify, when we talk about out-of-date services, These are versions of services and products that are no longer supported by the vendor. A classic example of this would be Windows Server 2008, which actually reached end of life in January this year. And what that means is that any newly discovered bugs or vulnerabilities simply will not be patched. So there's a very, very solid reason for each of us and also companies as a whole to install those pesky pop-ups asking you to update your software. Go ahead and do it. There's very solid security reasons to do so.
It's interesting. The vulnerabilities that you mentioned, Tom, to me look relatively straightforward if it's just a pesky update. So even schools could address this. Why do you think they don't, Owen?
Well, I think there's numerous reasons. Lack of technical resource or technical expertise, for one, is one that we mentioned before. Or, you know, schools think they might be protected. And they most likely are at a certain point in time. But the cyber world changes all the time, and schools need to be aware that the risks, they need to stay on top of them all the time and mitigate them as they arise. So it's not a quick fix. It's a continuous journey. It's something that has to be done all the time. You can't do it, say, you know, do it once a year and you're going to be protected for the year.
No, and you're an expert in this field, Owen. What advice would you offer to independent schools or to any company, really, to avoid the common vulnerabilities that we've seen identified in our research report?
Yeah, I think the main point I'd say is just don't rely on the assurances provided by your head of IT or your outsourced IT provider. You know, in my experience, they're usually doing, they're working hard and doing the best they can. But if you ask them, are we secure? I think they're going to say yes, because otherwise, if they weren't aware, they would address it. So you would be secure. So it's really important to get an independent view from a third party to just look at the configuration of IT networks and applications, use pen testing to proactively identify vulnerabilities, and just really stay on top of it all the time. But getting that independent oversight and independent assurance can be really helpful. And the second point would just to be prepared for things going wrong. So be prepared for a hack or ransomware event, put an incident response plan in place and test it at least annually. Because if you are prepared, it really does reduce the impact of when things go wrong. You know, it's when you're not prepared, that's when people phone us up. You know, they're really suffering with the impact.
Oh, thanks, Owen. That's some really good advice there. So it's been really interesting listening to more about the research and finding out about the independent schools. I think to wrap up now, it's fair to say that independent schools managing their cyber risk is going to have to play an important role going forward to avoid not only financial and data loss, but also the reputational damage which can do such harm and have such a big impact on their viability. Fortunately, it's not all doom and gloom. There's lots of help available through working with companies like Crow and using cyber risk management tools like Kind. Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you both, and thank you so much for sharing your insights. If anyone would like more information on managing their cyber risks or would like to read our research in full, please contact us at hello@kind.io and we'd be more than happy to help. Once again, thanks Tom and Owen, and to our listeners, I look forward to welcoming you next time to the Kind Podcast, which is coming soon.